We've been discussing over the past couple of weeks that we met. How basic beliefs and theological principles dictate behavior, have very real and far-reaching practical repercussions. Let's continue with that tonight. I believe it's quoted in the name of the Gra. That a person's avoda in life is tikkun hamidos. A person's avoda in life is tikkun hamidos. Now, while intuitively we understand that tikkun hamidos is very important and an important part of one's avoda, but to underscore it with a hey hayidia, that is the avoda which a person has in life, is very difficult to understand. It seems to be overstated. You find a similar difficulty, not exactly the same, a similar problem, the solution is not exactly the same, in how the Gra understands the Gemara in Shabbos, the famous Gemara in Shabbos, with the Gerim who appeared successively, first before Shammai, then before Hillel. So one of them says that he'll be Mizgaya al Menash Tilamdeni Kol HaTorah Kula Regel Achas. So Shammai throws him out, and Hillel says, Madisani Loch L'chavachal Asadvid, Ve'idach Perusha Zilgimor. So here too you have the same problem. How can Hillel tell him that V'ahavta L'Reacha Kamocha? Again, a similar problem, not the same problem. How can Hillel tell him that V'ahavta L'Reacha Kamocha is Kol HaTorah Kula? That the rest of Torah is a Perush on V'ahavta L'Reacha Kamocha. So Rashi, clearly bothered with that, says that Hillel is interpreting Re'ah to refer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Re'acha v'Re'ah Avicha. That it doesn't mean your fellow man, but it means the Ribbono Shel Olam. So he's telling him the Kol HaTorah Kula is to do with Tzon Hashem. V'idach Perusha. Everything else just fills out and fills in the details of what Ritzon Hashem is. Zil Gemur. But the Gra says that what the Ger meant, why did the Ger say Al Regel Achas? What the Ger meant is like this. That the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos that Al Shlosha Dvorim Ha'olam Omed, Al HaTorah V'Al HaAvodah V'Al Gmilas Chasod, that there are three legs or three pillars which support the world. So the Ger wanted a simpler formula. He wanted it reduced even more. Lamdeni Kol HaTorah Kula Al Regel Achas. That's what Al Regel Achas means. Instead of Gimel Regalim, so tell me Al Regel Achas. So Shammai, seemingly correctly, is a Dechofa V'Amas HaBinyan. He threw him out. It can't be reduced, the formula can't be reduced anymore. It's Al Shlosha Dvarim Ha'olam Omei. And Hillel told him, no. Madisani Lach L'Chav V'Chol Osavid, so the Gra is taking this at face value. Meaning that, no, he was telling him the Pshuto Shel Mikra in V'Ahavta L'Reacha Kamocha. So that only returns Rashi's original question, Hadra Kushala Duchta. How can Hillel be reducing Kol HaTorah Kula to Gmilas Chasod? As important as it is, it's certainly not Kol HaTorah Kula. So the Emes says that the Balatanya says the same pshat in the Gemara, says the same pshat in the Gemara, that, not like Rashi, that Vahavta L'Recha Kamocha is to be understood at face value, and he says that the pshat is like this, that the way a person interacts Ben Adam L'Chavero is also a reflection on his Ben Adam L'Mokum. And that a person who has genuine Yirah Shamayim, a genuine sense of Anova and Shiflos, if he really genuinely possesses these things, so then it will be reflected in his Ben Adam L'Chavero. And if his Ben Adam L'Chavero is lacking, so then that's a Simen Muvok, it's a telltale sign that there's something lacking in his Ben Adam L'Mokom as well. And that's what Hillel meant by saying, V'ahavta L'Recha Kamocha Madasani Loch V'chavecha Lo Savid. If you can really be very meticulous and very careful about this, it reflects your Ben Adam L'Mokom as well. There's a similar idea, l'chora, latent when the Gra emphasizes that the avoda in life is tikkun hamidos. There's a similar idea latent here. And that is as follows. The Rav Zichron Levracha at times explicitly in droshes, and at other times, more often than we realize, implicitly, would underscore the fact that Yahadus believes and demands that we can not only control, regulate, and sanctify our behavior, but also our inner life, also our emotions, also can and therefore must be controlled. And that's something which he on many occasions stated explicitly, but if you stop and think for a minute, you'll realize in many famous Divrei Torah and Shiurim of the Rav, with which we're familiar, this was axiomatic. Take the Yahrzeit Shir, in the first volume of Yahrzeit Shiur, Mevar Avelus, where the Rav explains that the clash which the Gemara just assumes is irreconcilable between Avelus and Simchas Yom Tov is really in the Kiyum Shevalev, right? The Rav explains that practically the two are compatible. In Avel is Mutter B'Bosu V'Yayin. On Yom Tov it's Mutter to abstain from Rechitza and Sicha and Ilas HaSandal, etc., etc. So why does the Gemara take for granted that there's a Tati de Sasre and that the Asei de Rabim has to be Docha de Asei de Yochid? Why can't we reconcile the two? So the Rav says, because the real incompatibility is in the Kiyum Shevalev. It's in the Kiyum Shevalev. That the Kiyum Shevalev of Avelus is a sense of being Menuda Lamokom, of being remote from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the real Kiyum Shevalev of Simchas Yom Tov is the sensing closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lifnei Hashem. So that's a famous shiur with which we're all familiar. So when you stop and think about it from a different perspective, how can there be a mitzvah? How can there be a mitzvah which tells me what I should feel and what I should experience? Nicha. Nicha. The Torah says, Avelus. So it's proper that a person should, there should be a certain objective reflection of degradation, and therefore he shouldn't wash, and he shouldn't use oilsand shouldn't have ne'ilas hasandal, etc., etc. Good. So that can be dictated. But how can the Torah, but you see from the Rav's chiddush, from the Rav's understanding, that that doesn't satisfy the requirements of the mitzvah. That the requirements of the mitzvah are only satisfied if a person feels and experiences this notion of being menudel amokom, of being far away from the Ribono Shel Olam. And conversely, the same is true when you talk about mitzvah simchas yom tov. It's quite clear that the Torah says that not only is it expected of us to consume basar v'yayin, but it's also expected of us to cultivate that experience of feeling lifnei Hashem. So it's quite clear that the Torah assumes the possibility and consequently demands of us not only control of action, but also regulating our inner life, emotions, and cultivating experience. Now, this has to be one of the most basic and repercussive ideas in Torah, in Hashkofa. Clearly, and again, this is something we all know, but perhaps don't always take a moment just to underscore this dimension. The fact that mitzvah tshuva demands not only azivas hachet and kabbalah lahaba, but the fact that mitzvah tshuva demands charata as well, means again that the Torah wasn't content with the behavior modification, wasn't content with simply, again, reforming and refining one's actions and one's external life, but the Torah was equally, perhaps primarily, concerned with one's inner life. And therefore the mitzvah of tshuva cannot be fulfilled unless it's accompanied by this genuine experience of charata. And kohena v'chohena, many mitzvos confirm this yesod, which the Rav underscored, of what the Torah's expectations of us are. But how is that realized practically? Halacha l'maisa, how does one do it? Halacha l'maisa, we experience, or we think we experience, so much of our emotional life as being involuntary. And therefore we assume that yes, the Torah can be regulating our actions, but how can the Torah be dictating the content of our emotional life? So consider the following example. Someone once raised the question, once, about the Rav's Yesod, about how the Kiyum Shebalev of Avelus is this notion of being Menuda Lamokom, of the Midas Hadin having acted against a person, Rachmana Litzlan, whether it was Echad Mechaburoso, Echad Mimishpachto. Someone once asked, how can a person experience that if the person who died was very old and it was just a natural occurrence? Zakenu Sva Yomim. So isn't that a natural occurrence? And how can the Torah realistically expect that our reaction should be to cultivate this experience of feeling, Rachmanu Litzlan, as though HaKadosh Baruch Hu has pushed us away? And it's a very good question, and Very natural question. So the answer is that in the Torah's, according to the Torah's perspective, and this clearly is, you don't have to go further than Parshas Bereishis, death is not a natural occurrence. But really, really, the ideal for which man was created, for which Adam was created, was to be immortal. Was to be immortal. A person's neshama is immortal, and really, it should have allowed a person to live even in his present state eternally. And that's what it says in Chumash, right? Ki b'yom acholcha mimenu is most homeless, that mortality is a direct result of chait. That's what created mortality. Now since that happened before all of us were born, so we mistakenly relate to death as something purely natural. But the truth is, according to the Torah's perspective, that's not the case. It's not something natural. And this same hashkafa is suggested by the Maimon Chazal, Vein Misa Belo Chet, Ein Yisurim Belo Avon, also suggests this same hashkafa, that it's not simply, again, a natural occurrence that the human body simply gives out after so many years. But it's an unnatural occurrence. In the larger scheme of things, if one has a sweeping view of things, it's an aberration. Now, if a person internalizes that hashkafa, let's just take this. This is only an example, not necessarily the most important example. If a person internalizes that hashkafa, and then you have someone else who has not internalized, maybe never even been exposed to that hashkafa. So then what we perceive as a purely emotional, and what we perceive as an involuntary reaction, truthfully, is being generated, the engine, right, which is generating that emotional reaction, is really this attitude or perspective which a person has on Misa, on mortality. And again, when you view it carefully, when you analyze it, so again, what we perceive as purely emotional and as unrelated to beliefs, attitudes, it's not true. It's not true. And similarly, and this will point a person in the opposite direction, but it also illustrates and confirms what we're talking about. A belief in Olam HaNeshamos and in Tchias HaMesim and in Olam Haba, also, again, unconsciously at the time. It's not that a person is necessarily reflecting and meditating upon it. Also, clearly determines what at the time seems to be a purely emotional, and again, as such, seemingly involuntary reaction. I think it was the first of this series of Shi'urim when we mentioned the Ibn Ezra and Lo Sachmod. Again, it illustrates the same thing, that Lo Sachmod at the time, again, it's an emotional, instinctive reaction. And yet the Ibn Ezra explains how, depending upon what belief in Hashgacha Pratis, a person has successfully internalized or not. So again, how he'll respond, again, instantaneously, instinctively, in reality, that emotion, that reaction is generated or dictated by the beliefs which he has about Hashgacha Pratis and exactly how, to what degree he not only subscribes to these beliefs but has really internalized them. To give one or two more examples, and if you'll think about it, it applies to virtually every single, again, reaction which we describe as instinctive or emotional. When you think about it, there's some attitude which is a part of the fabric of our being which really generates that, again, what we perceive as emotion. Anger also is not, by its very definition, it's not a premeditated, deliberate response. You can make a show of anger. But when a person genuinely feels anger, there's nothing premeditated about it. Something happens which pushes a person beyond his limits, and his response is anger. How does a person control anger, and how do such emotions reflect basic emunas v'deyos? With the exception of moral outrage, and there are occasions for moral outrage, too many occasions. With the exception of moral outrage, a person's ego plays a role every time he feels anger. A person is angered at what was done to him. And why did you do this to me? Or if what happened to him was impersonal, why did this happen to me? There's always ego involved in anger, again, unless it's a pure moral sense of outrage, of v'chein lo yeyaseh. And there's no question that the degree to which a person has cultivated the midah of anova and shiflus, which in past shiurim we've explored, is an automatic consequence of Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Somid. So to the degree that a person is aware and fulfills Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Somid, and therefore to that degree he becomes an honor of Ushval Ruach, to that degree he's able to control anger. Because there's always ego in anger. What about materialistic or physical yetzer hara? That's also instinctive. How does that consistent with the approach that really every emotion ultimately is rooted in some attitude, in a belief, in the hashkafa? So here we had discussed the Ibn Ezra and Losachmod. I don't remember if we discussed the famous Beis Halevi and Losachmod. Beis Halevi refers to the Ibn Ezra's answer and says it's a beautiful answer, but there's another answer, he says, maybe an even more basic answer. And he goes on to give the following famous mashal. He says, imagine a person who is obsessed with realizing a certain taiva that he has, whatever that taiva may be. And it's winter time, and the river is frozen, and he's running across the river after the object of his taiva. And all of a sudden he hears and feels the ice begins to crack beneath him. And he realizes that he's about to fall beneath the ice into freezing cold waters. So the Beis HaLevi says, what happens to his obsession? What happens to what he was so focused on, to the exclusion of everything else? So the Beis HaLevi says, obviously, it totally, totally leaves his mind, and the only thing he can think of is the imminent danger. The imminent danger. And then the Beis HaLevi writes, so he doesn't intend it as Musa. He writes it so naturally, so sincerely. It's quite clear from the style. He says, if we would have the most elementary level of Yiras Shamayim, that's what he says, if we would have the most elementary level of Yiras Shamayim, which of course is no less than the Yira this person feels when the ice begins to crack. He says, if you know that the Torah disapproves, so just one's basic Yiras Shamayim undercuts any taiva or chimut. It's a profound, profound vote. And even if one hasn't, well, the that we should realize what the Beis HaLevi calls that elementary level of Yiras Shamayim, again, if a person reinforces to himself, within himself, the Torah's stress on tzniyus, and how the Torah says you have to be mekadesh what's physical, and you have to be mekadesh anything which is source of physical pleasure, because otherwise it's just animalistic. If a person reinforces that to himself, within himself, so then that affects the way he sees the world. He sees the world differently. People don't have a taiva to eat a poisonous apple if they know it's poison. There's no such taiva. No such taiva in the world. If you look at the apple and you don't know it's poisonous, and then it's a luscious apple, so then a person can have a taiva. If a person knows that he's going to get sick from eating it, so then the same apple, it can be just as shiny, just as red, just as beautiful, the same apple you view differently, you perceive it differently. Even if we haven't been successful in developing that level of Yiras Shamayim, which the Beis Halevi is talking about. But even if we just reinforce within ourselves the Torah's standards of Tznius, the Torah's concept of Kedusha, again, in a more limited and even more elementary sense than the Beis Halevi is talking about, again, what seems to us, without reflection, to be an involuntary emotional reaction, in truth, is also a function of our perception, and our perception, in turn, is also a function of our hashkafa. If you know that the apple is orla, and that eating the orla is worse than eating the apple, that's going to make you sick physically, it's going to make you sick spiritually, so then it just doesn't, it's not attractive. It doesn't arouse in a person that desire for it that it could otherwise. And this is another, again, yet another example of this yisod, of how, again, what seems to be emotional reactions, in reality, can be traced back to basic hashkafas, attitudes, and beliefs, which generate, again, these quick emotional reactions. And l'chora, that's what the Gro had in mind. He wasn't talking about stam tikkun amidos, but if it's a tikkun amidos, as we're describing it, so then that really is a very, very broad and inclusive definition of avoda. And l'chora, that's what he had in mind.